On November 11th, the memorial candle was lighted as the solemn notes of the military bugler played taps as part of the Veterans Day ceremony being held at Faneuil Hall. The annual ceremony honored, through speeches and musical performances, the United States veterans and victims of all wars. The willingness to serve and sacrifice on the part of the 1% of Americans who actually do serve in the United States military, and giving back the love to all veterans who have defended this country, were the central themes expressed throughout the celebration. Originally called Armistice Day, commemorating the end of World War I on November 11th of 1918, it changed names in 1954 and became Veterans Day, a day to honor all veterans of all wars.
We need to remember the things that they have done. World War I, the war to end all wars, to stop the takeover of Europe. World War II, to stop Hitler and the Japanese. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here today with all the freedoms we have. I myself am a Cold War veteran. You know, was it an act of war? No, but it was still a conflict that we had to support. And the soldiers and sailors now that are Afghanistan and Iraq and supporting what we do to keep this country safe.
We just need to continue to honor these veterans and appreciate the sacrifices that they went when you know that how they left their families and their loved ones, and especially the ones that didn't come home, you know, the ones that are still buried overseas, and the many that people don't realize are buried and aren't buried. They're in the bottom of the ocean, and you can't imagine the extreme sacrifice that they provided for us.
Whenever our nation has called, and wherever needed, in times of darkness and danger, in times of peace and prosperity, Americans' veterans have responded and proudly carried the torch of liberty for all of us to see. Our veterans, this group of extraordinary Americans, the less than 1% who have committed to something which the other 99% have not, deserve our lasting gratitude and respect.
But the more I've thought about it, the more I've come to conclude that the biggest and most important motivation for most people who join the service and serve their country is love. It's love of their country, it's love of their family who may have served in the military, it's love of their friends who choose to serve in the military, it's love of that man or woman who's standing next to you in basic training, it's love for that person who's with you on the field of combat if you end up in a theater, and it's love for the opportunity to serve this country. And as we all know, it is the most selfless emotion of all.
On November 14th, the sounds of the bagpipe echoing throughout the courtyard of Old North Church gave way to the church service inside, honoring Remembrance Day, commemorating the end of World War I, Armistice Day, and subsequently other wars. The Old North Church was established in 1723 as a Church of England parish. To honor the church's deep affection for the British community in Boston, this service has been held with its British parishioners, friends, and neighbors for the last several decades. The service included a wreath laying at the memorial to the fallen British soldiers in the church's courtyard. Wreaths of poppies were placed in front of the memorial to symbolize the red blood shed in wars, and soldiers' dog tags were hung at the rear of the memorial, signifying the huge loss of life of British soldiers and other nation soldiers during wartime.
The remembrance is really important for us to, I think, collectively reflect on the sacrifice of not just all those soldiers who died in the First World War, the Great War, and they include many more than just British soldiers that were involved in that, but it's all war since then. And the importance of this is that this was the war that was supposed to end all war. And we know 103 years on, that is not the case. And so this is a moment just to reflect on the sacrifice of those that gave their ultimate, and for those that were injured in all those wars since that time, and just to treasure the freedoms that we enjoy as a result of that.
Remembrance Day was founded in the aftermath of the First World War, when 20 million people around the world were killed. And it became a moment of reflection and remembrance after the Second World War and on into the wars of the 20th and 21st centuries. And I think it's really important that we take the time to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice, who laid down their lives for their country, laid down their lives for our freedom. Particularly in the two big world wars, which are at the fringes of our living memory now, very few people alive who can actually remember those wars. And so taking time to think about that on today, Remembrance Sunday, is absolutely vital.
In our Remembrance Day service today, we think about the characteristics of the British soldier and all soldiers, really, but the courage and bravery and sacrifice, and I think also an optimism and a sense of duty, you know, and a willingness to give really everything that you have to try to make the world a more just and better place.
In the United States, we lost 166,000 people to World War I. The British lost over a million. And so Remembrance Sunday has always been deeply meaningful to our friends in Britain. The Old North Church was founded as a Church of England congregation in 1723. And although we're known as an American landmark for the American Revolution, we've always maintained an especially close bond of friendship with Britain and the English people. And it is because of their bravery and service that we are able to live free lives today. In the United States, we have been largely free from the horrors of war. We've had 9/11, of course, and Pearl Harbor, but on our shores, we haven't felt the ravages of bombs and cities being burned out in the way that England had. And so we gather today with our friends from Britain to remember the British soldiers, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand soldiers who gave so much for freedom in the world.
November 16th, Michelle Wu, a former city councilor and daughter of Taiwanese immigrants, became the first woman and the first person of color to be elected the mayor of Boston. She and her family moved from the Chicago area to Boston, where she graduated from Harvard University and Harvard Law School. She served on the Boston City Council from 2014 to 2021, including a stint as council president from 2016 to 2018. Following remarks by outgoing Mayor Kim Janey, Wu was sworn in as her husband and two sons held the Bible used for her to take her oath. In her acceptance speech, she stated some of her priorities, which included getting the small things right, charting a new path for families, creating more accessible transportation, and making Boston a more inclusive city.
City government is special. We are the level closest to the people, so we must do the big and the small. Every streetlight, every pothole, every park, every classroom lays the foundation for greater change. Not only is it possible for Boston to deliver basic city services and generational change, it is absolutely necessary in this moment. We'll tackle our biggest challenges by getting the small things right, by getting City Hall out of City Hall into our neighborhoods, block by block, street by street. After all, Boston was founded on a revolutionary promise that things don't have to be as they always were, that we can chart a new path for families now and for generations to come, grounded in justice and opportunity. And we can take steps to raise us all up to that promise together. The first time I set foot in City Hall, I felt invisible. But today I see what's possible in this building. And I see all the public servants raising us up. Frontline workers, first responders, teachers, bus drivers, building inspectors, city workers. I am deeply honored to work alongside you. And I ask everyone to join me in expressing our gratitude for your service. And I ask everyone to join us in the service of our communities. Boston, our charge is clear. We need everyone to join us in the work of doing the big and the small, getting City Hall out of City Hall, into our neighborhoods, and embracing the possibility of this city. The reason to make a Boston for everyone is because we need everyone for Boston right now. We have so much work to do, and it will take all of us to get it done. So let's get to work.
The next train to Government Center is now arriving.
On November 16th, the completed $29 million MBTA Green Line Branch Station project was visited by MBTA officials. The project consists of consolidating four stations into two new stations, Amory Street and Babcock Street. For these stations, there will be 225-foot platforms, more accessible entrances, 150 feet of protective canopies, and upgraded communication and safety features. By eliminating two former stations, this will create more efficient transportation in the neighborhood around Boston University. The MBTA's goal is to make every Green Line station and vehicle more accessible and more efficient, smoother and safer for all riders taking the T.
The MBTA had a situation where we had four stations that weren't in great condition, weren't fully accessible. So we were able to build these big, bright, brand new, fully accessible stations. We combined the four stations into two, so we get a little bit of time travel savings. But we are offering our customers a great amenity, a much safer, a much more accessible station. So this is a great chapter for the MBTA, and we're going to continue to invest in modernizing across the system.
Our faculty, staff, and students will definitely benefit from the consolidation of going from four Green Line stations down to two Green Line stations. It will allow our community to get to their locations faster than they had in the past. Also, the stations are much more user-friendly and handicap accessible compared to what was there in the past as well.
One of the goals of the Green Line Transformation Program is accessibility, finding a way to make the whole Green Line fully accessible one day. It is something that is the core of our program, and having these four inaccessible stops to turn into two full accessible stops, stations, it's a second accomplishment. And when you do this, less stops, it also helps with the riders and their travel time. So we're really excited to be working towards accessibility for the Green Line.
On November 18th, Mayor Michelle Wu held a press conference at Ashmont Station to discuss steps to expand the MBTA fare-free bus service. The program will be funded by $8 million and build on the current four-month bus pilot program for a fare-free 28 bus. The overall existing ridership on the T is at 53% of its pre-pandemic weekday level, but the fare-free program on the 28 bus saw its ridership surge to 92% of the pre-pandemic levels, making it the most popular bus route in the system. The 23 and 29 bus lines will be added to the fare-free pilot, and each serves a diverse ridership as it intersects with Blue Hill Avenue, which is being prioritized for improvements to boost ridership in the area.
Starting early next year, we will extend the fare-free pilot from a four-month program that began over this fall into a two-year program to truly see what's possible. And we'll go from just one route to three routes. And each of these bus lines serves a ridership that reflects Boston. More than 59% of riders on these three bus lines are low income. More than 96% of these bus lines commuters are people of color. So by taking this action, we truly will connect our communities and supercharge our recovery, putting these federal recovery funds to good use by supporting and investing in communities who have been hardest hit by this pandemic.
This accomplishes a few things. One, it does help riders who do not have the resources to get to and from work or other destinations, including essential workers, get there. And so we know it works to help those who desperately need it. But the second piece is it increases ridership. We want people to get out of their cars. We want people to get on the T. We want to do this to address issues of climate in the city of Boston. We're a coastal city. We have to operate with a sense of urgency on that issue. So the intersectionality of this initiative is incredible.
On these three lines, you know, it sounds, $2 sounds like it's not that much money. But again, over the course of a year, that's hundreds of dollars. And if you're paying $2 each way, $4 in a single week, that is food that you can put on your table. That is a toy for your child that they've been asking for that you haven't been able to afford. This is a really meaningful sum of money for regular bus riders. Again, especially those who can't afford to pay for that pass up front and have to pay ride by ride.
We've gone through the most intense economic shock since the Great Depression, and for a lot of people, you know, getting the stimulus funds that, you know, kept food on the table, kept the lights on, kept the roof over their head, and something as small and incidental as just being able to move around your own neighborhood shouldn't be an added burden. I think, you know, we're in an age now where people are, you know, really actively thinking about what they want as a job, ensuring that they're actually getting an adequate wage, and we no more conflicts at the fare box between bus operators and passengers, no more scrounging, you know, through the change jar at home to see, like, oh yeah, you know, do I got enough to take the bus today?